this is Meg Malone, the Vermont Edition digital producer, and you're listening to the Vermont Edition podcast. This episode has been edited for clarity and brevity. Happy listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. For years now, we've been talking about the bottleneck in mental health care in Vermont, where patients in crisis wind up in emergency rooms, sometimes for days, because there's no space in hospitals and hospital units that are equipped to treat acute mental health needs. Needless to say, an extended stay in an emergency room is not the best place to deal with and recover from any kind of health crisis. The point of the emergency department, after all, is to stabilize a patient so he or she can get treatment from doctors and in a setting that's better equipped to deal with the needs. But today we want to follow that chain a little further down the line. We have a shortage of psychiatrists in Vermont, and that often means that only people in acute crisis can get medical attention. People who need a psychiatrist but are not a danger to themselves or others, at least not in the immediate sense, are sometimes told they'll have to wait. For pediatric patients, there are even fewer specialists trained to treat childhood disorders. Imagine having a medical need. Maybe not one that's going to kill you, at least not today, but one that requires care. And you're told that the wait time for your appointment is 6 months, a year, two. How likely is it that your medical condition is going to magically cure itself in that time? That's what some patients find when they try to access psychiatric care. So today we're going to look at why we have this problem and how people who work in the medical field are trying to ensure that patients can get the care they need and deserve, even with a shortage of these specialized medical professionals. Dr. David Ratu is the director of Pediatric Psychiatry Clinic at the University of Vermont Medical Center and program director of the Child and Adolescent Psychiatry Fellowship Program. He's with us today. Dr. Ratu, nice to have you back.
Nice to be back.
And Dr. Harris Strokoff is medical director of psychiatry and behavioral health at Community Health Centers of Burlington. Dr. Strokoff, it's nice to have you with us today as well.
Thank you.
All right, so let's talk a little bit, first of all, about, is there a number that you know, a number of psychiatrists in Vermont? Have we pinned it down to the actual number, Dr. Ratu?
I think there's a ballpark number of around 175 psychiatrists in Vermont, with about 25 of them being child and adolescent trained. And that may sound like a lot, but many of them are doing important things other than primary outpatient care.
Like what?
Well, that could be working on inpatient settings, consulting to schools, doing administrative positions, engaging in important research. So there's a lot of important things that they're doing. And so the number is probably a lot less than that.
And how does that compare with doctors who have another specialty? I mean, can you put it in context, 175 psychiatrists compared to, pulmonologists?
Well, I think compared to things like pulmonologists, we're doing quite well, but the need is very different. And we know that psychiatric conditions, you know, depending on the study, can affect a huge percentage of people. We're talking about 20, 30, some people think more than 50%. So the demand is very different.
And Dr. Strokoff, I laid out a little bit of what can sometimes happen where somebody says, I have a medical need, and then they're told, well, it's going to take several months for you to get an appointment. Why is it a big deal to have too few psychiatrists? Can you take that a step further?
Well, I think psychiatric treatment is something that when you need it, you typically need it right away because conditions can worsen. And I think that one of the most important things is being able to access psychiatric services when needed to prevent the condition from worsening, and also then to allow that psychiatric provider to partner with the primary care doctor to allow for things to improve.
And are people really having to wait 6 months, a year, maybe sometimes? I mean, I heard that several years ago in certain parts of Vermont that really, unless you say, I am a danger to myself, I am likely to self-harm, or I think I might harm someone else, then you really are sort of put at the back of the line. Is that still true?
I think so. I mean, there are various different ways where people can access treatment in the state. For instance, as you mentioned, when people are acute, there are the designated agencies such as Howard Center here in Chittenden County, and they can oftentimes serve people faster. But one needs to be, for instance, maybe acutely suicidal or a danger to themselves or whatnot. And then in the community at large, there are some agencies that have better access than others. And then, but in the private sector, there's in my opinion, a big gap as far as, psychiatric providers in the private sector who patients can be scheduled with.
Dr. Ratu?
I would say that a part of this has to do with what people are expecting as care. In the traditional model, a primary care physician would make a referral, and the expectation would be the psychiatrist would kind of take over and see that patient very frequently, maybe about a month, every month or so. And that model is what is the hardest thing to find right now. And one of the challenges that our state is facing and that we're facing is that the best model for all patients all the time? And for some, it may not be.
You know, you just mentioned primary care physicians, both of you did. And of course, primary care providers can prescribe medicine. So when is it appropriate or necessary to see a psychiatrist versus seeing your primary care physician who, in an ideal world, knows you pretty well, knows what issues you may be having, knows what other medications you're taking, you know, can sort of work with you and certainly is able to prescribe? When does a situation require a psychiatrist versus a general care practitioner?
In my opinion, a vast majority of the time, one is going to get their needs met by receiving care from their primary care physician. Typically, in a medical home, the primary care physician knows the patient the best, maybe knows the patient's background the best. And my experience in working with primary care physicians is that they're incredibly dedicated and oftentimes knowledgeable in treating mental illness as well as physical illness. I'd say in the last 30 years, I'd call it an advance in medicine is understanding that so many of our physical medical conditions are made worse by mental health issues. And so I think that's led to a lot of primary cares becoming much more savvy when it comes to mental health treatment and whatnot. The answer to that question about when is it time to refer to psychiatry, in my opinion, oftentimes the primary care provider knows when it's time. When they're trying what they know and they're referring to who they can, and things are not improving, or when they have a sense that, you know, this is something that I won't be able to figure out with maybe referring to a certain therapist or working on certain parenting skills, et cetera. And so, in those cases, I think it's important for psychiatric providers to be available to team with the primary care provider to help improve a patient's condition.
Yeah, I would just add that primary care clinicians are expected to be an expert on a lot of things, and I'm very impressed with that. But there's a lot of variability out there. I know sometimes when I'm getting a referral from a particular pediatrician that I'm being asked to come up with plan D because they've already tried plan A, B, and C. Other times I'm being asked to provide plan A. There's just a lot of variability out there from doctor to doctor.
It sounds like in some ways one of the not solutions exactly, but one of the ways that this could work that's perhaps a little bit different than some of the other healthcare models is to have a psychiatrist who's consulting with the primary care physicians but not necessarily seeing every single patient. Does that work, or is it more a situation where a psychiatrist says, no, I need to see this patient. I need to evaluate the patient. We need to do all the kinds of things that you would normally do in an outpatient setting. And so it's not as easy as just consulting with that primary care physician to find the appropriate medication or appropriate treatment.
In my experience, what tends to work best is a blended model. I think access is everything. And so, for instance, for a primary care practice to have access to psychiatry, for one, to be able to answer certain questions and to consult so that maybe for patients that maybe do not need to be seen by a psychiatrist, or if it just isn't realistic that, due to a shortage that a patient can be seen. That being said, there are many patients where an evaluation by a psychiatrist is important. And oftentimes I've found that primary care providers learn a lot about treating patients by actually having the patient seen by psychiatry and then having a consultation at that time.
What happens to somebody who can't see a psychiatrist as quickly as they need to or should? Dr. Ratu, you work with children, with adolescents and children. So what happens to somebody who's in need of this kind of care and can't get it?
Well, the need to see a psychiatrist, sometimes there are mental health professionals, other types of mental health professionals where the wait is not existent at all. And so they can actually do quite a bit and help patients a lot. If there is a need to talk with a psychiatrist, there's a program here in Vermont that we participate in which any primary care provider in the state can call our child psychiatry clinic at the UVM Medical Center if they have a specific question, and we will get back with them within 24 hours. And it's not uncommon for us to sort of come up with a good treatment plan. And by the time that they actually see us in person a few months later, they're doing a lot better.
Well, this sounds very rosy compared to what we've been hearing, that this is a severe problem and that patients are feeling like they're not getting seen in appropriate times or they're not getting treatment. I mean, are you painting a rosy picture here? No problem. We can do it with 175 psychiatrists. All problems solved. Show over.
No, I wouldn't want to be too rosy about it. I think there really is a problem here. I think access needs to get better. And these are measures that we're taking to try to compensate to some degree, but I don't think we're there yet by any means.
I would agree. I mean, I think it's still a big problem. I mean, if you ask any primary care provider who does not feel like they have access to psychiatric consultation, much like you mentioned a pulmonologist, if you talk to a primary care provider who does not have access, say, to a pulmonologist or to a cancer doctor, you know, it's a massive problem. So I think trying to find more innovative ways to connect specialty care to the primary care clinician is really important. And as far as, you know, the problem about, you know, lack of psychiatrists, it also speaks to just some of the general problems in our society, especially, you know, in recent decades and the growing frequency of people struggling with different psychiatric disorders.
We got a note from Lisa in Bennington who says, I've practiced psychiatry in Vermont for 27 years, and I'm currently the only psychiatrist with any kind of private practice, very small, in Bennington. I am bombarded daily with requests to take new patients and have not been able to for 15 years, and also with offers from headhunters to place me in positions in Vermont for which they would pay me twice what I currently earn. I'm aware of being very underpaid, the part of my income which is salary, and under reimbursed, the part of my income which is private practice, but I love what I do. If I were a medical student or psychiatry resident now, someone who's likely to have student loans to repay, I would not come to Vermont. Nowhere can one be paid what one would need in order to shoulder the cost of living in Vermont and to pay back loans. Does that sound familiar to both of you?
Yeah, she brings up a really good point. And I think the area of care where Vermont really differs from other areas is that we have very few psychiatrists in private practice. And that really is different than a lot of major metropolitan areas. And so that puts additional burdens on academic centers and community mental health centers. And a lot of that may have to do with the reimbursements that a private practitioner can get out there on their own.
Why is it important to have people in private practice? I mean, why not just have all the psychiatrists at medical centers and universities?
Well, because we're a very small part of the overall picture. I think the University of Vermont Medical Center, our psychiatry department, you know, is something like 2% in terms of the overall mental health budget. And that's a much smaller percentage than, say, the percentage of neurosurgeons. So we really have to rely on other sources other than academic centers for the delivery of the care that affects so many people.
Let's go to Charlie, who's calling in from Brattleboro. Hi, Charlie. Go right ahead. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes. Long-time listener, first-time caller. Thank you. This is a very important subject that's being debated today. I am a primary care provider. I'm a nurse practitioner practicing in the Brattleboro area. And since I started for about 4 years ago, this has been the main issue, getting patients to be seen on it in a timely manner. And most of the time that I would have a patient that would be stabilized in primary care with the treatment that I can provide. But I found that with the most difficult ones, trying to get them to see to be seen, as it was said earlier in the show, you have to be in crisis. And I think this is very difficult for the primary care provider. And in the sense, you have a patient trying to help, but at the same time, with the limited practitioners, it's difficult.
Charlie, thanks for your call. I appreciate hearing your perspective as someone who works in this field. I also want to bring in here a note that we got from Nina in Brookfield, who says, I hope that when you discuss the psychiatric crisis in the state today, you make sure to mention the contributions of the psychiatric nurse practitioners in Vermont who work in every aspect of mental health care, doing much the same job as the psychiatrists. I have been in the field for over 30 years and now have independent prescribing authority for psychotropic medications, as well as the life-saving Suboxone and other medications to treat addictions. I've seen hundreds of patients have impacted hundreds of lives. We advanced practice nurses, however, are once again seeing the pushback against our independent practice with no data to support this pushback. I'm curious to know from both of you, both medical doctors, what you think about this idea of where psychiatric nurse practitioners fit in, who have prescribing ability, who in some cases may be able to be trained up a little quicker than a doctor. What's the role? What's the appropriate role of nurse practitioners here?
I'm glad you mentioned that, and they're a huge piece of the puzzle. And we work with them in our clinic, and we provide some of the training in child psychiatry. And I think that they're terrific, and they have a really huge role to play. So I'm glad that the caller brought that up. I'm not really sure what the pushback issue is, but
That doesn't sound familiar to you. That what Nina says is that they're feeling a pushback from having these independent practices.
Well, I'm not sure. I think the experiences they would have would be similar to basically anybody else who's trying to set up an independent practice.
Dr. Stroka?
Well, I agree. I mean, having psychiatric nurse practitioners, it's huge in our community. I work at Community Health Centers of Burlington, where we have a team of 7 psychiatric providers. 4 members of our team are psychiatric nurse practitioners, and they're outstanding. And, I think in our state, what we need is people who are good at treating patients, understanding the whole patient, and I'm lucky to work with some really good psychiatric nurse practitioners. And I think much to what David spoke to earlier in this program, having many people, regardless of the letters after their name, coming together to try to understand what's happening to people in our community and how can we best help people who are suffering get back to achieving optimal functionality. I mean, that's what it's all about.
We're talking today about what happens when there's a shortage of psychiatrists in the state, which is the situation in Vermont right now. We got a note from Zoe who says, as a public health professional, I have 2 suggestions regarding psychiatrist shortage. In the short term, increase the use of psychiatric nurse practitioners in ERs and throughout the mental health care system. Trained professional nurse practitioners can diagnose and treat and work in conjunction with MDs. Nurse practitioners can be trained in less time and at less cost than psychiatrists. Psychiatrists are needed, but nurse practitioners can reduce the burden by seeing 80% of the more routine cases and referring more complex ones to the psychiatrists. And in the long term, have emotional intelligence and interpersonal communications classes and peer-to-peer counseling classes available and required in schools. Everyone needs to understand what is mental wellness and how to maintain it and what to do when there are problems. Zoe's sort of also touching on this question of our sort of cultural mental health. And are the two of you seeing more issues, more severe issues? Is this an issue with our culture as well as the fact that there are perhaps not enough people to actually treat these issues? Are we seeing more issues in our communities, Dr. Strokoff?
I don't have data behind this, but in my opinion, definitely. If you go back even 50 years, the importance of the family, the importance of being a member of the community, having all of your interactions being face-to-face interactions, generally, in my opinion, it's a more natural way of being. And I feel like in today's age where people are largely more disconnected and technology is being used more as a way to socially communicate with others, it's caused a lot of problems.
I think some of it, though, actually may have to do with our success in helping defeat or at least combat stigma a little bit. And so there are more people who are willing to come out and look for help and maybe who wouldn't have done so in the past. And I think that may be increasing the demand.
We do hear frequently, particularly in psychiatric cases, that there are more behavioral issues that children are facing, or mental health issues. Is that not what you find, though? You're saying the stigma is in some ways a little bit lessened, so people may be able to come forward. So you're not necessarily seeing more cases of children or an increased sort of frequency?
There are different types of problems. I think there is some evidence to suggest that some of the more disruptive, rule-breaking, aggressive behaviors, while still a problem, are less than they have been in the past, whereas other types of problems like anxiety and depression may be up a little bit in comparison.
Let's go to Jim calling in from Chelsea. Hi, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
Just a response to a good point about one of your guests there who just mentioned the incidence of higher rates of psychiatric illness in the past 30 years. And again, it's this disconnect with society, family, spirituality, church. It's really alienating a lot of people. And again, I've had 35 years of experience in the psychiatric system, but and I've found that psychiatrists in general have just they're not really counseling anymore. They just write, they get the pad out and write prescriptions, and that's really their job. So really, psychologists are the more helpful people in with finding a road to wellness. But my last point is, I think medications are way overprescribed, and there's a book by Robert Whittaker called Anatomy of an Epidemic about this whole issue of overprescribing and putting people, because it's, from what I found, medications never helped me. Intentional, the peer support is what helps the most, and just finding a more holistic approach to wellness rather than medications are really just a Band-Aid to a much larger issue with an individual.
Jim, and, thanks for your perspective. I appreciate hearing your personal perspective and how you found relief. You know, this is not the first time that you've heard this idea that medication is not helpful, is not the solution. Dr. Strokoff, what's your response?
Well, I can tell you, you know, having done this for a number of years, that for many people, medication is life-saving. That I agree with you that medication, in some cases, is just a Band-Aid. And in some cases, it actually is a way of putting off, you know, handling things in a more therapeutic way. That being said, I mean, I've treated thousands of people in my career who would not be where they are today without medication. And really, it's a really individualized thing. I mean, there are certain people who struggle with existential issues that you're not going to get the answer from a pill. That being said, there are certain people who succumb to a depressive or severe anxiety disorder where medication is needed to help lift them out of that, so then they can be in the game, if you will, to find the peer support or find the meaning that their life requires.
Dr. Ratu, do psychiatrists do counseling, or is that where you then work with a psychologist and there is this sort of complementary type of treatment?
It depends on the individual. Psychiatrists are trained to do psychotherapy. Many still do. And while I would agree that I think sometimes medications are overused, I'd push back a little bit because I think there is a counter movement in our field now to really try to incorporate wellness and health promotion in the entire individual in our treatment. And I know that that is really one of our emphases at the University of Vermont Medical Center. And we really believe that very, very much and try very hard to use medications very judiciously.
Is there an argument to be made that having a psychiatrist who can figure out whether and what appropriate medication is may lead to less medication than if you're just doing, you know, a primary care physician who's saying, okay, well, let's try this. I mean, are there ways that psychiatrists could decrease the amount of medication that's being taken and used? I see you nodding, Dr. Strokoff.
I think so. I think about it, Community Health Centers of Burlington, where we're a large primary care practice with a psychiatric consultation, and we work, essentially shoulder to shoulder. I feel like we're oftentimes engaging in conversations about, okay, so history says medication should be used this way, but maybe we should be questioning that. And now, you know, in the for instance, the research is clear that for post-traumatic stress disorder, there are various psychotherapeutic modalities that dominate any medication. And so with that in mind, are we sometimes doing a disservice by prescribing medication initially without assuring that they're getting an evidence-based psychotherapy? And so I think that and I'm biased. I'm a psychiatrist, obviously, but I think that by having a consultation and by having access to these types of conversations, it allows us all to think about what we're doing, not just psychiatrists, but primary care providers as well.
Let's go to Rebecca calling in from Morrisville. Hi, Rebecca. You're on the air.
Hi, my name is Rebecca Brooklyn. I'm a psychiatric nurse practitioner, or an APRN, and I work at Lamoille County Mental Health Services with another psychiatric nurse practitioner, Julie Sullivan. And we have been striving to see clients in an emergency appointment, sometimes the same day. Of course, that was when you were talking about people that are considering self-harm or harming someone else, but we also get people in within 3 weeks. And I was totally agreeing what the doctor was just saying about working as a team. We have social workers and therapists, case management that we do even with our outpatients, and we see children and adults. And I think that everyone is working towards being evidence-based. So it's I just wanted to point out that there's a number of psychiatric nurse practitioners that are working in the state now, and we do have full prescription privileges, and some are also doing therapy, private therapy, out in the public.
Well, Rebecca, I appreciate hearing your perspective. Thanks very much for sharing that. And let's bring another voice into this conversation here as we talk about a shortage of psychiatrists and how then we sort of figure out how to work psychiatric care into our medical care and medical communities. Morning Fox is Deputy Commissioner of the Vermont Department of Mental Health. Nice to have you on the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
We've been talking sort of broadly about psychiatric care. There are some specific needs that the state of Vermont has when it comes to psychiatrists. One of them is forensic psychiatrists. You need a psychiatric medical advisor. Is the state able to have all the psychiatric needs that it has met?
We currently contract with four psychiatrists to do the forensic evaluations. Those are the evaluations that are being ordered by the criminal courts for competency and sanity. A few years ago, probably about a year, maybe about a year and a half ago, we put out a request, an RFP for proposals for people to basically say, hey, I'd be interested in doing this work, as we were looking to expand the number of psychiatrists doing this work. And we got zero, no new responses other than the four people who we currently work with. Very happy to have those four psychiatrists. The problem is many of them are getting to the point of cutting back the amount of work they're doing and or retiring. In a recent study back in 2014-15, the Department of Health in Vermont showed that there was 179 licensed psychiatrists in Vermont, 40% of which were over the age of 60, and about 22% were planning to retire or reduce their hours within the next year. Similar numbers hold true for psychiatric nurse practitioners in Vermont. Back in that same time frame, 2014-15, there were 64 psychiatric nurse practitioners, of which 42% were age over 60 or above. And so that's a big struggle for us. You know, we have a mandate to make sure that these evaluations happen. As we get more requests for these kind of evaluations, the workload becomes, you know, greater. So, you know, that has been a tricky piece. And you mentioned the department and a medical director. About a year or so ago, our medical director left for, different pastures and went to work in New York City. I'd say greener, but... but
greener in some senses of the word, probably.
Exactly. But since that time, we've been going without a psychiatric medical director here at the department. We've just been struggling to find someone either in-state or recruit from out-of-state to come here.
Why? Why is it so hard to recruit people to come here? Is it the pay is bad? The workload is too high? People don't like Vermont? I mean, what's the problem?
I think part of it is salaries. You know, as we're, you know, we contract for the psychiatric care at the Vermont Psychiatric Care Hospital in Berlin, the state hospital. All the psychiatric care there is provided through the UVM Medical Center. We have a contract with UVM to provide that psychiatric coverage. And even UVM has some struggles of psychiatrists who are interested in going into, you know, state hospital kind of level of care work. And so it's tricky. And I think UVM struggles just in their own. You know, the salaries just across the lake are higher in New York, excuse me, than they are here, you know, for starting salaries. So, you know, I think that financial piece is a piece. I think one of the arguments that we've done for years is the quality of life here is such a bonus that, you know, you can't put a price tag to it. But I think people are starting to say, yeah, but I want a price tag to it. Mm. And so I think that's contributing to it at this point.
Let's take a call from Sue, who's been waiting on the line in Colchester now for all three of you. Hi, Sue. Go right ahead.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Hi. I'm also the chair of healthcare reform for the Vermont Psychiatric Association. I think the collapse in the private practice workforce that's also happening in primary care is largely low reimbursement and massive administrative burdens. We were the first to get slammed with egregious managed care practices back in the 90s. There's data that shows that in the first decade of managed care, our percentage of total healthcare funding was cut in half. And access to psychiatry has been deliberately limited by insurance companies, which is a really foolish thing. Discrimination continues, especially when you look at things like suicide rates in Vermont, which another colleague pointed out to me.
So, Sue, what do you see as the solution then? Where do we go now to try to fix the problems that you're illuminating?
I think one of the things that would really help is if we passed the Senate Health and Welfare's version of the Universal Primary Care Bill, which includes mental health and substance abuse. If that bill was implemented correctly, in other words, that pretty much everything you did in your office as a private practitioner or primary care psychiatrist was covered, and it was a sleek system, and it was low hassle, and it was an increase in reimbursement, psychiatry would be really much easier to recruit to Vermont. When we passed single payer in 2011, we had more than 200 docs or medical students from other states who said, yeah, I want to come to Vermont. Because you guys are doing single payer.
So, Sue, I hear what you're saying here. Universal health care bill would help ease the problem. Let's get another thought in here while we're talking solutions. And this comes from Rick Barnett, who says, innovative solutions to psychiatric shortage. Prescribing psychologists treat patients with talk therapy and medication when needed in five states and in the U.S. military. Vermont had two bills introduced in 2017 and 2018. This will help. This will also reduce emphasis on medication while still getting the necessary help. The psychiatric establishment and the Vermont Medical Society oppose this. Why? So Rick Barnett is a psychologist in the area who really would like to see psychologists be able to prescribe. I'm curious, you're a psychiatrist. Is this a turf war, or do you see real reasons why there might be some concern about that? Dr. Ritu?
Well, I think we both work with psychologists, and we think that they're terrific and they're well-trained for what they want to do. And certainly if psychologists want prescribing privileges, there are a lot of avenues to do that. There's nurse practitioner, physician assistants, medical school. I think one of the things that gets lost is that to be a safe and good prescriber, you need not just pharmacological training, but you need good medical training. And I'm not sure that the proposals that were put in Vermont, a watered-down version of that, which gives you far less training than what you would have had as in one of these other specialties, is really the answer to that. Because I feel that people with mental health conditions should have their prescriber and their clinician have the same level of medical training as someone with a non-psychiatric illness.
Before we go, Dr. Strokoff, I know that one of the ways that you've tried to create capacity in the system for people to get treatment in a timely manner is to basically have a walk-in clinic, right? Is this one of the solutions that instead of making an appointment, calling and getting in a line, it's sort of more first come, first serve?
We found that to be useful at Community Health Centers of Burlington, and that's not a novel idea. The VA systems, including in White River Junction, Vermont, they used a primary mental health care clinic to help treat veterans when they had really long wait times. And what it is it's a way so that if a patient needs to be seen, they can be seen either the same day or within a week. And in what we do at Community Health Centers of Burlington is we make it first come, first serve. If a patient is a CHCB patient, they check in the morning, and they're guaranteed to be seen that morning by their psychiatric provider. And what it does is, for one, it allows for expedient access. It prevents problems from getting worse while they're on a waiting list. And two, we've actually found that it decreases administrative burden because, David, I'm sure you would agree that we in psychiatry spend a lot of time thinking about how can we support patients who can't get into the clinic. And there's hours and hours of time spent by a number of different professionals and administrative staff on how to manage this. And so sometimes, in my experience, a simple answer of, well, let's try to see this patient right now, actually can save a lot of administrative burden, nursing burden, et cetera, and we found it is fairly useful at community health centers.
Well, lots of ways to try to tackle this problem. I appreciate all of you being here today. Dr. Harris Strokoff is Medical Director of Psychiatry and Behavioral Health at Community Health Centers of Burlington. David Ratu is the Director of the Pediatric Psychiatry Clinic at the University of Vermont Medical Center and Program Director of the Child and Adolescent Psychiatry Fellowship Program. And Morning Fox is Deputy Commissioner of the Vermont Department of Health. Thanks very much to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.